Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Lamed Vav Amud Bet by the last line. Tanu Rabbanan, En ofim patava bePesach. One cannot bake what seemingly here in the Gemara means a thick matzah on Pesach. Divrei Beit Shammai uBeit Hillel matirim. On the other hand, Beit Hillel says there's no problem with having this thick piece of dough be made into a matzah. The problem or the chashash here is that if you have something that's very thick, you can't prevent it from the chimutz, from it expanding or rising. And that is because it won't bake through either thoroughly or because the amount of time it takes to bake through will exceed the amount of time it takes for it to rise. And therefore, you will not be successful at preventing the rising of the dough. The machloket here is whether we are choshesh for that problem. And then where it says, v'kama patava, what would be the maximum amount of thickness that Beit Hillel would say is fine? Amravuna tefach, up to a tefach. Shkein matzinu b'lechma panim tefach. That's what we found by the lechma panim, that it was a tefach thick, because the lechma panim has a panim, a face to it, and that face is created by the lechem folding upwards on the sides, and a panim is only called a panim when it's at least a tefach high. We know that the lechem panim is under the restriction of chametz, because nothing in the mikdash was brought was chametz, the menachot, and included in that riboy of the menachot not being chametz is also lechem panim. And so therefore the lechem panim was definitely matzah, and yet it still was a tefach thick, and we don't worry about it becoming chametz. And so from that, the Gemara wants to prove that a patava, a thick piece of dough, can be made into matzah without any problem. And that's the reasoning behind the shita of Beit Hillel. Gemara now says, Matkifla Rav Yosef, is the comparison, is the derivative of this halacha really make sense? Imamru bizvizim, imamru b'sheinam zvizim. If we say this by Kohanim, who are zariz and careful about the baking of the bread, experts at doing it, and they can prevent the chimutz, we're going to allow this in the public in general to do this and take that risk. Imamru b'pat amila, Yomar v'pat she'enu amila. And if we say it by a dough that is worked heavily, as the Gemara in Menachot tells us with regards to the Menachot as well as the Lechem HaPanim, that the dough that was used in order to make it was kneaded and pounded heavily, and that is that it requires shlosh miot shifa v'chamesh miot bita, required 300, whether the explanation is that it different types of pounding of shifa and bi'ita, or shifa refers to the way that they shell the kernels to make the flour, and that they have to rub it or roll it 300 times, and bi'ita refers to the number of times they have to pound the dough. But either way, it was heavily worked, and we know that the rule is with regards to dough, that as long as one is engaged with the dough and continues to work it, it won't rise, because it needs to be left alone in order to rise. So here you have a dough that was heavily worked, and therefore it's less likely to rise versus normal dough that's out in the public at large when they're dealing with their kneading. They're not going to work it so hard, and therefore it's more likely to rise. Imam Rube Tzimi Veshim, when it comes to the Mikdash, they use very dry wood in firing up their furnaces and baking their bread. Yom Rube Tzim Lachim, whereas the people out in the public at large are using wood, and that wood may not be completely dried out. It's a reference to the Gemara in Tanit that says that through Tu B'Av, that's the peak of the summer, the hottest point of the summer. Until that point, they used to take wood into the Mikdash because then it was completely dried out. Once already past Tu B'Av, they would stop bringing wood because they were afraid that the heat of the sun wasn't strong enough now to totally dry it out or completely dry it out. And therefore, they wouldn't accept that type of wood for use in the Mikdash. So the Mikdash was very careful about getting very, very dry wood, which is not true of the public at large. Imamru b'tanur cham yomru b'tanur tzonein. In the Mikdash, the oven was used on a continuous basis. It was used daily, and even on the daily basis, it continued to be heated up and stayed very hot, as opposed to out in the public at large, where these tanurim can be fired up and then cooled off and maybe used once a week, maybe used not as frequently, and therefore were not as hot. Imamru b'tanur shomatechet. Regards to the oven in the Mikdash, it was made out of metal, which reaches higher levels of heat, and therefore maybe that's why they were successful at baking it even when it was thick. Whereas in the public at large, the ovens that were found by most people were made out of earthenware, and they don't reach those temperatures of a metal oven. And therefore, how can you compare these two cases? What Rav Yosef is pointing out is that the source for the fact that you can or are permitted to bake dough of that thickness is from something where you can't compare the cases. You're trying to derive it from the Lechem HaPanim. Lechem Panim has many particulars about it that are unique to the Lechem Panim in the Mikdash that will not be replicated when you bake bread outside of the Mikdash. Never, you can't assume just because it's permissible in the Mikdash means that it's permissible outside of the Mikdash. Therefore, Amar Rabbi Abba, Shilit at Rabbi Biyuchud. So Rabbi Yirmiyah Baba says that I asked my Rebbe in private. I had a private audience with him, and I asked him in private about this. Umanu Rav. And who is that? My Rebbe is Rav. So he was asking Rav this question. Igadamar Rav Yirmiyah Ba'ava Amar Rav Shilit et Rabbi Biyuchud. Or another version of this is that Rav Yirmiyah Ba'ava said that he heard Rav say, he heard from Rav, that Rav said, I had a private audience with Rabbi. And who is Rav's Rebbe? That's Manu Rabbeinu HaKadosh. That's Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. So either way, this was something that was conveyed in a private audience with the individual. Or otherwise it could be translated, Biyuchud means this particular question that I addressed to him, not necessarily that it was done in a private audience. Biyuchud means Biveirur, I got a very clear answer or a clear instructions about what to do in this situation. And the question was, my Patava. What is this Patava that Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai are arguing about? Until now we've assumed Ava means thick, and therefore it meant a dough that was of a certain thickness, and that's what developed in the Gemara as to what the case was and how thick it could be. So pat miruba. They answered that parava does not mean a thick dough, but rather means a large quantity of dough. V'amai kari le patava. So then why do they call it a thick dough if it's just about a quantity of dough? Mishum dinefisha belisha, because it requires a lot of kneading. Meaning that since you're doing a large quantity, it's not that the dough is thick, but it has the sensation of being thick because you have to knead it so much because you're dealing with such large quantities. So as Rashi points out over here, it's not about the thickness of the dough that is being baked, but rather it's about the quantity of dough that's being baked. When it's put into the oven, it's put in a very thin layer or thin types of dough. The question really comes about on the kneading of the dough as to whether when you're working with such large quantities of dough, dealing with those large quantities of dough, what's the din? And Beit Hillel says it's mutar. Beit Shammai says it's asur. Vibaitema, and some suggest, Ba'atri Daitana, Lepat Miruba, Patava Karule, that it was a language nuance, and that in this Tana's town, when they spoke about a large quantity of dough, they used to call it a thick dough. My Taima, then what's the reason behind the machloket now between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai? Imishum dekarach tarach tircha delo tzarech. Gemara now makes a suggestion that it's not particularly unique to Pesach. It's not worried about chimutz, that the large quantity of dough that you're going to be working with is therefore going to rise and be a problem, but rather it's an issue that is generic to Yom Tov, which is that you're not allowed to do extra excess effort or work on Yom Tov, even though there's certain melachot that are permissible and you're allowed to bake on Yom Tov, you're allowed to cook on Yom Tov. What we don't allow you to do is a tircha sheina tzricha or a tircha yetera, unnecessary exertion or excess exertion. We don't allow you to engage in that on Yom Tov because it's going to ruin the spirit of the day. And so here, this is a question as to whether the tircha here is permissible. That's the way Rashi views it over here, that it's simply a question about the amount of effort that you're going to have to put in. And machlok between Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai, is whether you're allowed to engage in this excess effort on Yom Tov or not. The other hand, Balia Tosafot suggests that the machloket here is about whether when you need a certain amount of bread, are you allowed to then go and bake larger quantities of bread? The Gemara in Beitza on Daf Yud Zayin brings Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Memala Isha Kol HaTanur Pat. A woman can fill the entire oven with bread. Mipnei Shapat Ne'efat Yafa Bizman Shatanur Malen. Because the pot bakes much better when the oven is full. So over here, she only needs a small amount of bread. Yet, we're going to allow her to bake large quantities of bread, even though she only needs a small amount. So that's a tircha she'ena tzricha. But there is a mitigating factor, and that's what Beit Hillel is going to say according to the Balia Tosafot, which is that a woman can bake large quantities of bread because the quality of the bread is much greater when you bake it in a single oven in a large quantity. So even though you only need a small amount, we allow you to bake the larger quantity, even though you don't need the remainder, to raise the quality of the small amount of bread that you need. Tosafot calls it me'aremet isha. A woman can use this ploy and bake larger quantities of bread, even though they only need a small quantity of bread, in order to fill the entire oven, to make it, first of all, worthwhile to heat up the oven and to work the dough and to do it in a process that then produces larger quantities than necessary. Beit Hillel says that is fine. Beit Shammai disagrees and says that that's a tircha delo tzorich, and we won't permit it on Yom Tov. Now the Gemara says, okay, if that is the issue, according to Rashi, that's just tircha yetera, too much exertion or effort. According to the Baya Tosafot, that you're allowed to fill larger quantities than you actually need. Ma'iriya b'Pesach. Then why does the Braita quote this as an issue by Pesach, afilu b'Yom Tov Nami? It's a more generic problem for Yom Tov in general, not particular to Pesach. Mar says, Eino Chanami, you're right. V'haitana b'Yom Tov shel Pesach koi. Happened to be this Tana was talking about halachot of Pesach. So he mentioned this in the context of Pesach, but it's not unique to Pesach, it's true of any Yom Tov. Tanya Nami Ochi, they have a Braita that supports this understanding. Beit Shammai Omrim, Eino Fim Pat, Ava b'Yom Tov. You're not allowed to bake a thick pot on Yom Tov, and again here, pat ava would not be pat ava, but rather pat miruba. And the reason the Braita is supportive of our understanding is because it doesn't, like the previous Braita at the bottom of the previous Amud, where it says Pesach, here it does not uniquely say Pesach, but it says generically Yom Tov. As you see from here, that even though it's called a pat ava, it's still a problem on Yom Tov. Well, if it has to do with Chametz, it's only going to be a problem on Pesach, it's not going to ever be a problem on any other Yom Tov. The fact that it Braita here makes it into a problem for Yom Tov shows you that it's speaking about a different issue, and that the Patava means Pat Meruba. There is an alternate Girsa that's quoted here in the Masorah Shas from the Gemara Beitza that says the Braita says Pat Meruba. Once you do that, then clearly it's a proof to this understanding that the Patava here is a Pat Meruba. Beit Hillel, Matirim, and Beit Hillel says it's Mutar, as we saw in the previous Braita, that Beit Hillel is Matir, and Beit Shammai is Oser. The Rif suggests over here that that's only true on Yom Tov, that these quantities are allowed, but on Pesach we would be choshesh for the problems of chametz, and therefore you cannot need large quantities of dough because of the problems of chimutz. The Baal HaMor disagrees and says that it's only true about kneading the dough, but not true about baking the dough. You can bake large amounts on Pesach, you just can't knead large amounts on Pesach. And the Mechamot, the Ramban over there, defends the Rif and says that the Rif is really saying what the Baal HaMor is saying, which is that you can only not need large quantities which you can't manage, but you're allowed to bake large quantities which can be managed. And even though, according to the first list shown in the Gemara over here, it would sound like that this is even speaking on Pesach, and you're allowed to need large quantities. Nevertheless, the Ramban says that the Rif's Psak is based on the second list shown of the Gemara, and that's the Halacha. Although there are those that try to defend, even in the first lashon, this view of the Rif. Now, as far as the conclusion of the Gemara here rejected that the pat ava that we're speaking about here is about the thickness of the dough, but rather it's speaking about the quantity of the dough and the tircha yatera, which is a generic Yom Tov problem, not a Pesach problem. What does that mean then with regards to pat ava, with regards to dough that is thick? So you have two possible ways to view it. Either that the Gemara rejected any sort of limitation on how thick the bread is, because the Gemara rejects it completely, and says that that's not the right explanation of patava. If that's the case, then you would conclude that there is no limitation on how thick the dough is, as long as you can bake it through, and it's not left raw, it can't rise afterwards, then it'd be fine. The other way to read it, and this is what the Ber Halacha says, the way that the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Halacha, that this maximum or limit of a tefach is still in place. And even though from the Gemara, it seems that we dropped it based on the question of Rav Yosef, nevertheless, the Mishnah Berurah and the Ber Halacha explains that all the Gemara did was say that the proof from Lechem HaPanim was not a good proof. But that doesn't change the fact that the original Halacha is still intact. And therefore, the Ber Halacha says that he thinks that the Shulchan Aruch Psak Halacha, which is brought from the Rabbeinu Yerucham, that mentions it, is not simply just the Rabbeinu Yerucham's din, but it is a broader din or acceptance of the halacha by the Gemara, and therefore it is the proper psak over here, that even though many of the Rishonim and Achronim say there is no limitation, he thinks there should be a limitation of a tefach, because the Gemara's statement was never undermined, that that is the amount of patava that is appropriate to bake on Pesach. Just means that the only thing the Gemara rejected was that you can learn that from Lechem HaPanim, but the original din remains in place. And as we already noted at the end of yesterday's daf, that as far as the Ashkenazim are concerned, many of the Ashkenazi Achronim already say that even at a tefach it's problematic, and therefore they want it to be much thinner than a tefach, and only b'diavad, if it was baked bigger than a thin wafer-like or cracker-like level, then we would check to make sure that there was nothing raw left behind, but l'chatchila we wouldn't bake it like that, as opposed to so many of the Sfaradim that follow the Pesach of the Shulchan Aruch, that up to a tefach is even good, the chatchila. Okay, now the Gemara continues and says, Tarnabanan, yotzim bepat nikia. You can use for the flour, for the matzah, white flour. Means that flour that was sifted and is very clean flour. O behadra. Or you can use flour that is whole wheat and that was not cleaned, and today, generally, the matzahs are made from whole wheat, although it's a mix of whole wheat and white flour, but nevertheless, either one, according to this braita, is fine. Ubisrikim amitsuyurayim, whether these are Syrian cakes or cakes that are designed, either way, these are types of dough that are made into certain designs to make them fancier, nicer, appealing. You can be yotze the chiyuv of achilat matzah on the first night of Pesach. Now, afal pi shamru, enosim srikim mitzurim bePesach. This is despite the fact that we don't allow you to make these type of designer doughs on Pesach. If it is made b'diavad, it's okay. But l'chatchila, we don't want you making it. Amar Rav Yehuda, davezeh shal baitus benzonim l'chachamim. A very prestigious baker, Baitus Ben Zonim, asked the Chachamim as to why it is that he can't make these specialized breads or doughs of matzah on Pesach. Mipnei ma'amru eino sim srikim etzurim bePesach. Amalo mipnei sha'isha shoha aleha. Because the woman takes her time in order to shape it. And in that period of time where she's delaying, tarrying in shaping of the dough and making it perfect, umachmetzta, it tends to rise. And it causes problems of chametz. Samalahem ef shayya senabit fus. You don't have to do it by hand. You can do it using a mold. Vikavena kevan. So kevan can mean that you will design it. It will be put in perfectly. You won't have to spend time designing it. Or Rashi says kevan means very fast. You're able to do it expeditiously. And the mold will make it go much quicker. And therefore there will be no tarrying. Amrulo. So they answer to him a refrain that is used a number of places in Shas. Which is Yomru kol srikim asurim. That all of these designer doughs are problematic. Visrike baitus mutarim. And the designer doughs, a baitus who uses this mold, will be okay. Or what the Gemara is saying here is, lo plug. We can't make distinctions. We can't have subjectivity in the law. And therefore, we have to say that all srikim are problematic. Yes, there are ways possibly to make it where it's not problematic like you, who has these molds. But that isn't the majority of people. And that's also not necessarily true of all the other bakers as well. And therefore, we can't permit it because of the risk that is involved that people will do it not through molds. And therefore, we can't make a distinction or a differentiation between the srikim that you make and the srikim that other people make because they will not be able to differentiate and understand why one is mutar, one is asur, therefore we make it asur across the board. Again, the concept of lo plug. So I'm Rabbi Lazar Bar Tzadok. Pamachat nichnasti achar abba lebeit Rabban Gamliel. So Rabbi Lazar Bar Tzadok says, I went after my father Tzadok, who was going into the house of Rabban Gamliel. And sure enough, they served these designer doughs on Pesach. Marti abba, lo kach amru chachamim, enosim srikim etzurim bePesach. He quotes them, like we saw in the Braita, that you're not supposed to make these on Pesach. Amalei b'ni. Lo shel kol adam amru. That's not a generic statement. Ela shel nachtomim amru. That's only of the bakers. Meaning that according to this version, the nachtomim, the bakers who are doing this commercially, they spend a lot of time on it because they want it to be perfect. They're selling it, and it has to be appealing. It has to have aesthetics to it, and therefore they spend more time on it, and it's very risky. Whereas if you do it in your own home, people kind of do it right, or they take a little bit of time with it, but they're not going to tarry so long because it doesn't have to be perfect. So therefore, it's only problematic when it's done commercially by bakers. It's not problematic when it's done at home. Or igadamre, some say just the opposite. Hachi gamre le, this is what he said to them. Lo shel nachtomim amru. It's not said about bakers, ela shel kol adam. Only when it's done in the house where people don't have the molds or don't have the speed or can't complete the task expeditiously, that's where it's problematic. But if it's done in a commercial bakery where they know how to do it and they do it all the time and they possibly have molds, over there it would not be problematic. From here, it seems like this statement of Rav Tzadok is rejecting what the Gemara said before about lo plug. And that we would make certain distinctions, but the distinctions have to be broader brushed distinctions. You can't just say that the fancy or designer doughs of Baitus Ben Zonim are okay, but nobody else or none of the other bakers are okay. But if you can draw a clear distinction between bakers and homemade, over there, that's a distinction people can understand or people can grasp. So that's his suggestion that maybe over there you could make a dividing line and say that one is mutar, one is asur. What you can't do is say that certain people is mutar and certain people is asur when they're in the same category, whether they're both commercial or they're both household baking. And therefore, you can't be discerning in who the gezerah applies to. And the question here between Rabbi Tzadok and the statement of the Gemara before is how non-discerning can we be? He said you can make a class distinction, a distinction between a commercial versus household. Whereas the Gemara before seems to say that you can't make any distinction at all. Once it's going to be a sur, it's going to be a kusur across the board, unless you read Rav Tzadok as qualifying the lo plug. Again, invoking this principle of lo plug. The halacha, it turns out that it is a makloket rishonim as to whether we view Rav Tzadok as qualifying the chachamim or arguing, and therefore there is no distinction, or you can make a distinction between bakers and homemakers. Shulchan Aruch, in Or HaChaim, Siman Taf Samach, Sif Dalet, Paskins, that we make no distinction and we have no srikim hamitsu yarim. Now, Amar Rabbi Yossi, Osim Srikim, Kamin Rikikim, there is a way to make these shaped or designer doughs. That is, if you make them wafer-like and very thin. Because over there, there's no risk of them rising because they're so thin and they bake so quickly. So in those situations, it's mutar because they are completely different. Pein Osim Srikim, Kamin Gluskaot. On the other hand, you can't make these designer or these shaped doughs that are like cake or that are much thicker because over there, you have the risk of the dough rising. Partly because you're taking so long to deal with it, because it obviously takes more time the thicker it is. Number two is it takes more time to bake. And so all of those combined together make the risk much higher when it comes to these thicker doughs. But if it's a very thin dough or wafer-like dough, then we don't worry about it being shaped because there the risks are much lower in terms of the chametz issues. And the Mechaber, again, in Taf Samech Siv Dalet says that you're allowed to comb the matzot or put the hole punchers through the whole matzah if you do it very quickly. Because even though there's a tziur there, you're not delaying or tearing to make the tziur because there's nothing in particular about the design. It's just that you're trying to create the hole so it doesn't rise, and that is permissible. The Ramah afterwards says, V'yesh lasota matzot rikikim. It's a good idea to make the matzot very thin. The Ber Aloch over there makes a suggestion that the Ramah is really addressing what the Mechaber says, that instead of doing it quickly or worrying about the designs when you do it with a comb or with the hole punchers, just make them thin, like we just saw in the Gemara. Once it's thin, there's much less issue with regards to the tziur. Although the Ber Aloch favors reading it that way, he says that's not the way that the other Achronim read it. And they read that the Ramah says this in generically, that it's to make matzot rikikim v'lo patava kashar lechem kein rikikim aharim lachmitz. And they see that as an imperative in general with matzot, that one make the matzot cracker-like and thin so there is no problems of chametz, and that is the practice of the Ashkenazim. Now the Gemara moves on to other sets of items, and here the question of the Gemara is, does this item qualify as bread? Now obviously it has implications in terms of being qualified as bread for a number of areas of halacha. One is challah. Do you have to be mafrish challah from this item? Number two is, do you have to make a bracha of motzi lechem min aretz versus borei minei mizonot? And that would also be somewhat dependent on this, although you could, as the Balei Tosfot are going to point out later in today's daf, maybe distinguish between the two, that sometimes it'll be lechem for challah, but it won't be lechem for amotzi, and vice versa, that there might be some distinction between those two dinim. And obviously the last issue is, which we're not going to exactly address right now, is whether this is chametz or matzah, whether it can be successfully made into matzah or without it rising, but that's not the question at hand in the Gemara. So Tana Ranan, we bring a braita, a sufganim, so these are something akin to a donut, sponge cake, something that is, as Rashi says, absorbent, can take in a lot of oil. Aduv shanim, these are doughs that were basted with honey. Vais kritin, which either is like a spice type of dough, or a dough that is made directly on the fire or directly on the coals. It is a much like a waffle-like type of dough. V'chalat tamasreit, which is roughly equivalent to a pancake, as we'll see. V'ameduma, and when you have chulin and shuma that are mixed together. All of these are pturim in a challah. They do not require that you take off challah from them, which is the requirement that someone in a domestic situation take off 1/24th of the dough and give it to the kohen. And in a commercial situation, you take off 1/48th of the dough and give it to the kohen. The mitzvah of challah that's mentioned in the Torah. Of the items that are mentioned here, I mean, duma does not require challah for a separate reason, as Rashi notes over here, which is that challah has to be taken from something that is not already designated as truma. In Meduma, when you have a mixture of Truma and Chulin, over there, you now have something that's already Truma. And Truma does not need another Truma Challah to be taken off of it, or because it's being eaten by the Kohen, it does not require Challah to be removed from it. And therefore, Meduma does not require Challah. That's the reason that Rashi brings. And so, according to the Gemara Nido, this Tano is following the position that Challah Bizman Hazeh is only Midrabanan. Therefore, Meduma, which is a mixture of Truma and Chulin, is only a sur midrabanan, and that's because min haTorah it's batel berov, so assuming that there's a majority of Chulin there, it would be as if the Truma does not exist. Nevertheless, the Chachamim said In order for Truma to be Batel, it has to be 100 Chulim to one of Truma, 100 to 1. And since you don't have that here, it's problematic, Midrabanan. But since you're only dealing with Chala Midrabanan, an Easter Midrabanan of Meduma can undermine the necessity to give Chala Midrabanan. But the implications of that are, had the Chiyuv Chala been Mina Torah, then even Meduma would be Chayav in Chala, because it's only rabbinically Asur, because Mina Torah, this is all Chulin. And therefore you would be required to give Chala from it. But the Rabbeinu David points out that even if you believe that it's the Rabbanon, why does that help you over here? Even if you believe it's the Rabbanon, it's usher to eat this Meduma, because it has Chulin and Truma mixed into it, it still has a percentage of Chulin and a percentage of Truma. And only the Truma portion of it should be Patur Min Chala, but the Chulin portion of it should be Chayav in Chala, at least Midrabanan then. So why do you get a complete waiver from getting to give Chala on this just because it's Meduma? So either you have to say that the Chachamim, when they said Meduma is a din like Truma, they gave it a status of fully being like Truma. And even though there is Chulin and Truma mixed there, they classify it as Truma Midrabanan across the board, and that's why you are Patur the Gamrei from Chala. Or you'd have to suggest that something inherently about a mixture that does not require a Chala to be taken from it. If that's the case, it may not just be true by the Rabbanan, might even be true by Doraita. And therefore, some believe that that's the sheet of the Rambam, that even Midoraita, you are Patur from Chala when it is Meduma. Now, with regards to the other four items that are mentioned here in the Braita, these are Paturim Chala because they don't get a status of Lechem. And now the Gemara is going to try to understand it. My Chala HaMasreit. What is this Chala HaMasreit that you are Patur from Chala? I'm Rabbi Yishu ben Levi. Ze Chalut Shel Balabatim. This is dough that is boiled by homemakers or homemade breads that are boiled. So the failure over here is that it's not baked to be a bread. And that's why it is patur min achala. So now, Gemara here has a machloket between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan with regards to these items. I'm Reish Lakish. Halalu masei ilfistein. All of these items that are mentioned in the Mishnah are not baked in an oven. Rather, they're baked in a bowl or a pot of some sort. Even though, as Tosafot says on the next Amud, it's without any liquid in it, but it's baked in a way that it simulates the effect of an oven. Nevertheless, Reish Lakish says, since it's not baked in an oven, it doesn't have a din of lechem, and since it has a din of lechem, there's no chiyuv chala. B'yokhan amar maseilf is chayavin, that when you bake it in a pot, you bake it in a bowl that's heated up like an oven, that would be considered lechem, and you'd be chayav in chala. V'halalu, so then why are the ones in our braita now p'turim chala? Shasan bechama, because the way that they were heated up, or the way that they were baked, was in the sun and not by fire. And that's why they fail to be classified as lechem, because they're not made by a heat source of fire, but rather from the heat of the sun. Now, the Rabbeinu Tam says, both on the previous Amud, and in this later part of the Amud Bed of today's Daf, that this Gemara is speaking about what's called blila rakah. That all of these doughs that are being made here are very thin doughs. They're watery type of dough. And that is what the problem is. The reason that it's not automatically assumed to be bread is because the nature of the kneaded batter is a batter that's very liquidy. And therefore, when a batter is liquidy, the only way to convert it into lechem is to bake it in an oven. If you don't bake it in an oven, it will never classify as lechem. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Tam believes that if something is a blila ava, if it is a thick dough that is made into a batter, or it's a dough that is kneaded to the point where it's thick and not liquidy in nature, then that automatically has a din of lechem, whether it is baked in an oven or not. In order to be lechem, as long as you're either a blila ava, if you have something that is kneaded into a very thick type of batter or dough, then that is lechem, no matter how you cook it or no matter how you take care of it afterwards. In addition, if it is blila rakah, if it is a liquidy type of batter, if you put it into an oven, it also gets a shem lechem. So those are two different ways to create the shem lechem in order to be chayav in chala. And that's the machloket here between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, which is, does the putting it into the pot to bake it simulate the oven sufficiently for it to be considered afiyah, baking, to the point where it'll get the classification of lechem, where Reish Lakish says no, and Rabbi Yochanan says yes. And the second half of today's daf, he's also going to note that Rabbi Yochanan agrees that if there's water in there, or water or any other liquid that's causing it to be cooked and not baked, that it also will disqualify it from becoming lechem. And even there, Rabbi Yochanan would agree that a maisa ilfis, it does not make it into lechem. And the Rabbeinu Tam in the Tosfot on the second half of today's daf also points out that that's the same din with hamotzi. something will be classified as a motzi as long as either the kneading process was something that was done in a way that made it thick, or if it was something that was baked in an oven in the end, or according to Rabbi Yochanan, baked in a dry pot. Any of those things will make it into the lechem to be chayav b'chala, as well as make it into something that requires a bracha of a motzi lechem min haaretz. The Rosh Mishantz disagrees with Rabbeinu Tam and says that even when you have a thick dough, if originally when you kneaded it, you intended to bake it, then if you end up, instead of baking it, cooking it, then it would have a status of lechem like the Rabbeinu Tam says. But if you put together something that is a blila ava from the outset where you wanted to then cook the dough and not bake the dough, then it would be ptura from chala because your original intent was to not make it into something that was a fui. And so if from the outset you made this blila ava and you didn't intend to bake it, and then in the end you don't bake it, that will not be something that is chayav in chala, and presumably would also not be chayav in the bracha of a motzi lechem in haaretz. In addition, there are other rishonim that disagree with the Rabbeinu Tam's view with regards to blila raka, which is that he says that when you have something that's very watery, a liquidy, if you bake it, then it takes on the form of something that's chayav in chala and would require a bracha of a motzi. That would mean things like cakes that were made from a liquidy batter that then baked in the oven would require hafreshat chala, and also would require a bracha of a motzi. The other Rishonim disagree and say that once something is a blila raka, a very watery or liquidy mixture, that it's baked, baking won't change that fact, and therefore it remains something that's patur min achala, and doesn't require a bracha of a motzi lechem min haaretz. Alright, so now the Gemara is going to discuss this machlok between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish as to whether a ilfis can stand in for an oven or be the equivalent of an oven. The Gemara brings Meitavei, Asufkanim, Vadufshanim, Vayist Kritin. Those are three of the items that we mentioned in the previous Braita. Asan Beilfis, Chayavin. Just like Rabbi Yochanan says, if you make them in a pot that's dry and you bake them, then you would be Chayav in Chala. Bechama, if you bake them in the sun, they're Pturim. Tiyuvtei, the Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. This is a strong refutation of the position of Reish Lakish. Amorla, Amorlacha Rabbi Shimon Lakish. She'll explain it this way. Hachabayit Skinan. What it has to do with is shirtiach or the sof hitbik. Depends how you heat up the pot in order to bake the bread in it. If you first heat up the pot and then you stick the dough to the walls of the pot in order for it to bake, then in Ochanami it has a din like an oven and it will be classified as lechem and be chayav in chala as well as in a birkat hamotzi. But hitbik or the sof hirtiach, on the other hand, if you put the dough on the walls of the pot and then only afterwards heat it up, then that does not simulate the effect of an oven. That's not like an oven where you heat it up first and then you put the dough in to bake afterwards, and therefore that would be patur. And so that's how Reish Lakish explains. The previous braita that said you are pturim in a chala, he says that's even if you do it in a pot, because there the dough was put in before the pot was heated up. This braita that says that in an ilfis you are chayav, it's a case where you heated up the pot first and then you put the dough in it. So that's what he's saying here. How come I skin shirtiach sof hitbik? Aval hitbik l'sof hirtiach. My, hachanami de pturim. You would be patur in that case. So then, according to Reish Lakish, if it was a case where you put the dough in first and then heated it up, you'd be patur. Gemara says, adatani seif, if that's the case, why don't you make that differentiation in the latter half of the bright that we just quoted? Asan bechama pturim. That if you did it in the sun, you're patur. I have a finer distinction that you could have made. Lift the ogven nebi dida. Make this finer distinction. It's only true if you heated up the pot and then put it in that it's classified as lechem. Aval hitbik ul sof hirtiach. On the other hand, if he first put the dough in and then only afterwards heated it up, turim. Gemara says, ein ochanami chasurei mechsera. The braita is missing that transitional part to the braita. V'achitani. That's what the braita says. When is it true that it's classified as lechem when it's put in an ilfis? That's hirtiach ul sof hitbik. That's only if it was heated up first. And then afterwards, it was pasted to the walls. Aval hitbik ulesof hirtiach. If you put it on the walls, and then only afterwards heat up the pot, naseh kemisha san bechama. It has the same classification as something that's baked in the sun, which doesn't have a classification of lechem, according to both Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan. Upturim, and therefore be patur mechala, because it's not lechem, and would not require hamotzi. So that's the way that Reish Lakish deals with this braita that was a problem. Tashma, yotzim b'matzah hino. One can use matzah that is partially raw, u'matzah suya bilfis, or matzah that was made in a pot. So again here, this seems to be a problem for Reish Lakish, because it says here that if you have it made in a dry pot, it's similar to being baked in an oven. So hachanami shi'tiach l'sof hitbik, Ashkenazi makes the same qualification that the reason it works here is because the pot was first heated up, and then you only afterwards pasted the, or put the dough on the walls of the pot, which simulates the way it's done in an oven. My matzah hina. What is this matzah hina that we mentioned in the Braita? I'm Rabbi Yehuda Meshmuel. Koshim porsa vein chutim nimshachim emenu. It's a case where when you break the bread or the matzah that you have here, it doesn't have a stringiness to the raw dough that is left internally. So if you have raw dough that's left internally, if when you pull it apart it's still stringy, that's not considered lechem because it's not baked sufficiently to be classified as lechem. Then if you pull it apart and it breaks apart, even though there's something raw left inside, that will have a classification of lechem. Amarava v'chein lachmei todah. That's the same ruling with regards to lachmei todah. When you bring the lechem to go with the todah, when you shech the zevach, the korban todah, at that point, it's mekadesh the lechem. It sanctifies the lechem to be a korban. That lechem has to be lechem at that point in time. So the Mishnah tells us in Menachot, that means it has to be karmu panav, that it's outside of the bread, has to harden already, meaning the crust has already hardened. How far along did the hardening of the crust have to go in order for it to classify as lechem, in order for the zevach to be mekadesh the lechem? That is exactly like the description over here, that if you broke the bread now, it might be a little raw inside, but it still would not be stringy in that raw dough that's left inside. It says, pshita. Why would the qualification be different for challah than it is for the lachmei todah? The lachmei todah, it says challat lechem, and by the requirement of matzah, it says lechem oni, and by challah, it also has a requirement that vayu ba'achlechem lechem aretz. Vayu ba'achlechem lechem aretz terimu tumal Hashem. So if it's true by matzah, it should be true by challah, and it should be true by the lachmei todah as well. Why would you seek to make a distinction between them? The Gemara answers, I would have thought whole viktiv, but it says by the lachmei todah, we give menu echad mikol korban, that you have to give one out of the 40 chalot that you bring, 10 of which are chametz, 30 of which are matzah, from each of the four different types of lechem that you bring, you have to give one whole one to the kohen, one out of 10 of each one, so the kohen gets four out of the 40 loaves. Echad shelo yitol pros, that the one that you give to the kohen means a full one, and not one that is broken. I would have thought that even though over here it's not stringy when you pull it apart, yet it's still not fully cooked, that we wouldn't view it as a single entity. Since it's not a single entity, it doesn't qualify to be the lechem natodah that you need. That even though it's still raw on the inside, we consider it as being a single unit, and therefore it's echad, it is one, and since it is one, it can be given to the kohen, it qualifies as a lachmei todah. And therefore, when the zevach is shechted, the todah is shechted, it will be mekadesh the lechem. And now the Gemara brings a question that is going to focus on Rabbi Yochanan and then leave us in a quandary as to what the psak halacha here is with this machloke between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, which is meitevei hameisa beit shemai putrim beit hillel mechayvin. Something that is flour that was boiled in water, beit shemai says it's patur michala, beit hillel says it's chayav in chala. Hechlita, which we'll see in the Gemara in a second, is almost the same thing. Beit Shammai mechayvin. Beit Shammai over here says chayav, Beit Hillel potrin. So it would seem that whatever is true by the Me'isa, that Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel reverse their opinions when it comes to Hechlita. Ezu Me'isa, Ezu Hechlita. What's the difference between them? Gemara says, Ha Me'isa is kemach shagabe muglashim. Muglashim are very hot water. Water that is gulesh, that kind of flows over. So it's already boiling water. And then you put the flour into the boiling water. Hechlita is the other way around, that you put the flour in the pot and then you pour the boiling water onto the flour. So that's the difference between this me'isa and echlita. They're both flour that's going into boiling hot water. Just one of them, the boiling hot water is there and you pour the flour in. The other one, the flour is in the pot and you pour the boiling water on top of the flour. Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi omer mishum aviv, zeh v'zeh liftor. Both of them are not chayav in chala. Bar Milan, some say that his position was zeh v'zeh lichiyuv, that they're both chayavin. Chamim omrim, echad zeh v'echad zeh, doesn't matter whether it's mi'isa or echlita, asan b'ilfis. If you make them in a pot, potur, then it's problematic. It's not considered lechem and it's not chayav in chala. B'tanur, if you make it or bake it in an oven, then you are chayav. The Tana Kama who has this machloket between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, mashna mi'isa, mashmaishna echlita. What is the difference? In the end, both of them end up with boiling water and flour being put together that makes the dough that's here. So why would you have any distinction between them? And as Tosfot points out, wait, there could be a distinction because we have a principle that's raised by the Gemara in Chulin, which is whether tata gavar or ila gavar. When you have two items that are being mixed together, when you have something hot and something cold, which one governs what's going to be the outcome of this situation? Do we say the one that's on top governs? Do we say the one on the bottom governs? And that would have an nafkamina here, because in the case where the hot water is in the bottom and the flour is coming in, that means that the boiling hot water is going to affect the flour right as it comes in. On the other hand, if you have the flour in first, which is cool, and then you pour hot water into it, if you think that the bottom governs, then the coolness will cool down the hot water rather than the hot water boiling up the kemach that's there. The Tosafot says you could have drawn a distinction, but the Ri'i suggests that the Braita does not make any sort of distinction. It just says things like a halachic outcome, and therefore it could even be a case where there is exactly the right amount that you'd be chayav in challah for.
As we saw before in the Gemara in Shabbat, 5/4 of a kav worth of dough
to make you chayav in challah, and there's no way that some of that flour that was there or some of that dough that was there was not boiled. And therefore, you now are below the shi'ur of challah unless you include the amount that was boiled. And if that's the case, you see from the boiling over here that it is impactful on the item. And so why should it make a difference if it's boiled when the water is poured onto it? Whether it's boiled when the flour is put into it, there should be no distinction. So we have Rabbi Yehuda saying in the name of Shmuel, and we have a similar statement from Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, or some say that it is in the name of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, there is no difference. Whatever you think the machlokah between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai is by Achlita, you would say the same thing by Meisa. So then why did they get reversed in the Braita, their positions? Tavro, you need to break it. Meaning that this is a position of two different Tanaim, and they were conflated. Misha Shanazo, the one who taught the first din in the Braita, Lo Shanazo, did not teach the second din in the Braita, and vice versa. Whoever taught the second din did not teach the first din. And that means that according to the first that we had here, which was that Amisa, Beit Shammai Putrim, Ubeit Hillel Mechayavim, which means that Beit Shammai is the Kula, and Beit Hillel is the Chumra, and he says you are Chayav, that would be true by the Echlita as well. Misa and Echlita, Beit Shammai would say you're patur from Challah, Beit Hillel would say you're Chayav in Challah. And the second statement of the Mishnah that says, when it comes to Echlita, Beit Shammai is Mechayev, is the Chumra, and Beit Hillel is the Kula, and says patur, he would say that both by Echlita and by Meisa. So again, it's a conflation of two Tanaim, and whatever position they hold by one, like the Echlita, they would hold by Meisa, or vice versa, by Meisa, they'd hold by Echlita. Tani Mihat. So now we finally get to the question, which is the question of Rabbi Yochanan. Doesn't matter whether it's Echlita or Meisa, Shasan Beilfis Patur. If they're made in a pot, they are Patur. Bitanur Chayav. But if they're made in an oven, they're Chayav. Tiyufti de Rabbi Yochanan. That is a strong refutation of Rabbi Yochanan's position. This is exactly like what Reish Lakish says, that when you're baked in a pot, it doesn't have a din of lechem. When it's baked in an oven, it does have a din of lechem, and it's Chayav in challah. So how is Rabbi Yochanan going to deal with this braita? Some of the chal Rabbi Yochanan tanaehi. It is a machloket tanaim. Eino chanami. This tana does not agree with what I say, but I have other tanaim that support my position. The tanya yochol yeh mi'isa v'chaluta chayavin v'challah. You would think that mi'isa and chaluta have a requirement of challah. Tamalomar lechem. The Tana Kama says the word lechem does not cover these situations when it's mi'isa v'chaluta, and therefore it's not chayavin v'challah. Rabbi Yudomer ein lechem ela afui betanur. Lechem is only something that's baked in a tanur. Now, Rabbi Yehuda, Hainu Tanakama. What's the difference between Rabbi Yehuda and Tanakama? They both say that it's patur michala, and so why is one of them have a different position than the other? Elalav, it must be, masei ilfis ikuminayu. The difference between them is whether baking it in a pot works to simulate the effect of an oven, and it's considered afuya. Tanakama savar, masei ilfis chayavin. If it's made in an ilfis, it is chayav, and that's why he says, as long as it's classified as lechem, you're going to be chayav in challah. The problem with misa and chaluta, it's made in something like a liquid, and it's boiled, and that's the problem. Had you made it in an ilfis or in an oven, that would work. You'd discover mice ilfis p'turim. It says that even a mice ilfis is problematic. He says it has to be made in an oven in order to be classified as lechem. So their machloket is going to be, well, how do you classify some as lechem? Is it simply when it's done in an oven, which is the view of Rabbi Yehuda over here, as well as the view of the Chachamim, which we just brought before, that when it's made in an oven, it's considered to be lechem. If it's made in ilfis, it's not. And then we have the Tana Kama of the bright that we brought here, who thinks that even when it's made in an ilfis, it's still classified as lechem, as long as it's baked. It could be baked in an oven, it could be baked in an ilfis, and that's who Rabbi Yochanan is going to subscribe to. He says, lo, you don't have to read it that way. Dukol yama masi ilfis p'turim. Everybody agrees that when you make it in a pot, it is patur, even though you didn't add any liquid to it. It's a case here that after you boiled it, you went ahead and baked it. This is a question of basically a bagel, a situation where the dough is first boiled, and afterwards then it's baked. Does it have a din of lechem? So that's what the Gemara suggests now. That's what they're arguing about. The Tanakama Savar Kemin Shechazar Vafo B'Tanur. Tanakama, since you, after boiling it, baked it, lechem karinen bay, that has a full status of lechem. Rabbi Yehuda Savar En Lechem Elafui B'Tanur Mi'ikara. Rabbi Yehuda says that only if it's baked from the outset. In a tanur, does it have a din of lechem? If it wasn't baked from the outset, then it doesn't have a din of lechem. It came into Mi'ikara, la B'Tanur Afya, in our case over here. Since it was boiled first and then only put into an oven, lav lechemu, it doesn't have the classification of lechem. Amarava, my time with the Rabbi Yehuda. What's the reason behind Rabbi Yehuda that only an oven works? Dichtiv, it says vafu eser nashim lachmechem betanur echad. Says that women will, in the tochacha, have to bake all their bread in one tanur. There'll be such a deficit of, first of all, ovens and dough and kemach, that all of these women are going to pool their resources together to bake their bread, all that they have, in one oven. That's part of the tochacha. Lechem afui b'tanur echad, karud lechem. Lechem that is baked in a single oven is classified as lechem. Shein afui b'tanur echad, if it's cooked, baked, it's processed in two different ways, meaning that it reaches from its raw state to its finished state through two different tanurim. Tanurim doesn't mean an oven necessarily, it means some sort of heating process. Ein karud lechem, then it doesn't have a din of lechem. So only when it's baked in an oven does it have a din of lechem. If it was boiled first and then baked, it wouldn't have a din of lechem. All right, we're going to read one little more piece of the Gemara, which we'll go over again tomorrow, but we're just going to read it so that we can then go back to the Baal Yeh Tosafot and see the machloket, the Gabi Halacha over here, between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. And the Gemara continues, Yativ Rabba v'Rabbi Yosef achorei de Rabbi Zeira. Rabba and Rabbi Yosef were sitting behind Rabbi Zeira. Yativ Rabbi Zeira kamei de'ula. And Rabbi Zeira was in the front of the class, and he was sitting in front of Ula. So Ula is the teacher. He is the main chacham here. Rabbi Zeira, who is seated further up in the class, has greater rights in terms of questioning and is held in higher esteem in the class. And behind him are Rabbi Yosef and Rabba, who are contemporaries sitting behind Ula. Amalei Rabba the Rabbi Zeira. So Rabba whispers to Rabbi Zeira, who's in front of him, by my name Ula, can you ask this question of Ula? Hidbek bivifnim, virtiach mi bachutz. What happens if you put the dough, plaster it on the walls of the oven, and then heat the oven from the outside? That's the way Baal Yeh Tosafot read it. Rashi over here claims that this is dealing with an ilfis, it's dealing with a pot, and that the question is, what can you put the dough on the inside and then heat the pot from the outside? Which is a strange type of question, because isn't that the normal way that you would heat a pot? And that would imply that the view of what an ilfis was until now was that it had coals inside of it, and you were baking the dough inside the pot with coals, which does not seem to be what the Gemara was speaking about, as well as the Baal Yeh Tosafot point out, it would render the following question by Rav Yosef also moot, and therefore they don't agree with Rashi's view here that we're speaking about an ilfis, that this is in a pot, but rather speaking about in an oven. So here, where you heat the oven from the outside rather than the inside, Rabba wants to know, does that have the same din as afuya, like in an oven? Mau, what would be the din? Samarlei, so Rav Zera says back to him, Ma'imalei. Why should I ask the question? Diaminale, because if I ask him the question, Amarli, he's going to say, hey, niu, maseilfis. That's the din of maseilfis. That's exactly what heating up in a pot is like. When you put the dough on the inside and you heat the pot from the outside, that's the din of heating in an ilfis, and that's machloka Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. And similarly, when you have an oven, where you put the dough on the inside and then heat it from the outside, it's no different than an ilfis. And whatever you think the locha is by Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, you're going to think is the din here. So it doesn't pay to ask Ula that question. Amalei Rav Yosef, so Rav Yosef then whispers to Rabbi Zeira, if you stick the dough inside, again Rashi says here it's inside of a pot, whereas Tosafot says it's inside an oven, and then you have a fire that's burning, not internally in the oven, but rather right outside the oven. You have a torch, or something that's heating it, not externally, like Rabba suggested, but something that's in the mouth of the oven, it's heating it up. Mau, what would be the din? Amalei, my amalei. Why should I ask that question? Diaminalei, because if I ask the question, amalei, rovaniyim osimken. That's the way that most poor people bake their bread. And of course, when the poor people are baking their bread, it's going to be classified as bread. That is a normal process for poor people to do. They don't have the ability to heat up the ovens beforehand. They don't have the ability to maintain the heat in the oven. Therefore, they heat the oven by putting the avuka in the mouth of the oven to bake the bread in that manner. And therefore, of course, it's going to be considered afuya, and it would have a din of bread. Okay, now, we're going to stop here with regards to the Gemara. And now, the Balei Tosafot point out that the Rabbeinu Chanan over here, paskins like Reish Lakish. Because the fact that the Gemara then rejected this Machloket Tanaim in the Brayta and said, Lekulei Alma, Maisa Ilfis is Patur. Everybody says that when you bake the bread in a pot, it's Patur. That means we paskin like Reish Lakish, because that's the view of Reish Lakish. And the Gemara is saying, Kulei Alma is in that direction. On the other hand, the Balei Tosafot bring from the Ri, that he thinks that the Locha is like Rabbi Yochanan. First of all, because the Gemara in Yevamot brings that there are three exceptions to the rule that halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan versus Reish Lakish. And this isn't one of those three exceptions. So why should it be that the halacha here is like Reish Lakish if this isn't one of the exceptions to the rules? Other Rishonim like the Ran point out that maybe the din in Yevamot is only when they're controversial, or it's not clear from the Gemara whether the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan or Reish Lakish. Over there, the halacha is always like Rabbi Yochanan with the exception of those three cases. But over here, where the Gemara makes it obvious that the halacha is like Reish Lakish, then the halacha is like him, and it doesn't have to be one of those exceptional cases. Number two, the Reem notes over here, and we mentioned this earlier in the daf, that Rabbi Yochanan agrees if you put a liquid into the pot, then that undermines its status as being afuya, even though it's being done in a pot, and he says when you do it in a pot and heat it, that's considered to be afuya. That's only if it's done on a dry basis, but if it's done on a liquid basis, then that would not be the case, and that means that in the Brayta on the previous Amud, where it said that one of the things that was patur me chala was the chalata masreit, and the Gemara explained that that was chalut shel balabait, that was the boiled dough of the balabait, that would have application even according to Rabbi Yochanan, and that means Rabbi Yochanan didn't disagree there. He thinks that that's also patur. The argument was only about the other three items that were mentioned in the Brayta, and obviously this would have implications with regards to bagels, because here Rabbi Yochanan's agreeing if you boil the dough, then it would not be classified as something that is lechem, and then you'd be subject to the machloket that we just brought in the Brayta as to whether when you bake it afterwards, does it gain a classification of bread, or does it not gain a classification of bread? On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Tam enters his position that he mentioned on yesterday's daf, that's only true when it's a belila raka, when it's a thin batter. But if it's a thick batter, then even though you boiled it, it still has a status of chala, and still has a din of amotzi, because thick dough, by definition, has a shem lechem to it, and therefore it doesn't matter how you process it. So according to him, if you boil the dough, it would have a din of lechem, and it would be chayav and chala, and would require amotzi lechem in arts, even though you never bake it, because it's thick. The Gemara here is only discussing thin batters, and in those thin batters, all of these machlokot, and all of these questions between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish come up, as well as the machloket as to whether it was boiled and then baked afterwards makes a difference, because there, the bli la'aka is not inherently lechem, it only becomes lechem when it's afuya, when it's baked afterwards. Tosafot gives a couple of examples of items in the French or Italian over here, and he says, imkein al laftzuli and pantentalti, which the panniculi seems to be these small breads, but obviously they're small breads that are made from liquidy batter, and therefore they have a din of borei min hamizonot, as well as the panatelli, which are made out of breadcrumbs and made into like a daisa, like into a porridge of sort. Those are bay borei min hamizonot, because they are both blila raka, meaning that they're watery batter, as well as the fact that they're not baked, and therefore they have a din of borei min hamizonot. On the other hand, a galeton, which in the modern French is a galette, which is like a flat bread that has oil in it, or an erbalata, which is like a calzone, according to the Balei Tosafot, those will require a hamotzi, make it a bracha on them. And then on the ublis, which is this type of spiced bread, even though it's not made with a liquid and it is baked, so it should have a din of lechem, nevertheless, you don't make a bracha of amotzi on it because Rabbeinu Tam says it doesn't have what's called torita de nehema. It doesn't have the shape or the look of a bread. In order to be amotzi, you need to have something that looks like bread, at least. And then the last thing he mentions is vermicelli, which is a type of pasta, that even though that might be chayav, according to Rabbeinu Tam, in chala, it does not have a requirement of a bracha of amotzi because, again, it doesn't have something that looks like pot. And the Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeya Siman Shin Chav Tet quotes this Balei Tosafot Halacha, with the exception of the Rabbeinu Tam's view that when it's Bilila Ava, when it's a thick batter, that it automatically has a din of lechem, there he passes like the Rosh Mishantz, that if you originally intended not to make it into something that's baked, then that would not have a din of lechem automatically, and therefore if you, from the outset, believe that you're not going to make it into bread or bake it, and you make it a thick batter, it will have the same din as Bli Leraka, which is as long as you don't bake it, it will not have a shame lechem. And if you do bake it, then it will have a shame lechem. But as far as the Bli Leraka is concerned, if in the end you do bake it, then it will have a din of lechem, assuming that you have sufficient amount of dough, flour in there to qualify to be chayevet in challah, unless it is heated up through a liquid or through oil, which we already noted, would then disqualify it from being classified as efuya, even according to Rabbi Yochanan. And in that case, it would not have a din of lechem.
You also find that the poskim do not believe that there's necessarily an exact correlation between what is chayav in challah and what you make a birkat hamotzi on. So there are items that you'll be chayav in challah that you will not make hamotzi on, like cakes, that meet the minimum requirement. Although the other way around, if you are making hamotzi on it, you most likely will be taking off challah from it. Okay, we're going to end here. Three lines from the bottom of Lamed Zayin Amud Bet.